With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
With AT&T in-car Wi-Fi, elevate your adventure by transforming your vehicle into a reliable Wi-Fi hotspot. Connect up to 10 devices up to 50 feet away from your vehicle, making it ideal for camping and road trips. Don't miss out on the fun. Embark on your next adventure today. Visit att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to check if you're eligible for a free trial. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
This crowd rises to its feet. Vaccaro slammed it home. Garland left wing, three ball. Perfect. Garland went to the lane, locked the Mobley. Pow! And Allen blocked the shot at the rim. Pow! With the left hand and a foul.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media Family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. The Chase Down is presented by Fubo, the official streaming partner of the Cavs. Watch over 350 channels of sports and TV, including Bally Sports Ohio, without cable. There's no cost and no commitment. Try for free at FuboTV.com/Cavs. I fumbled that intro, but that was the only mistake anyone wearing Cleveland attire has made all night. The Cavs were fantastic in their win over the New Orleans Pelicans, starting the road trip off with a W and back in the win column, back up at the 2 seed. And joining me today is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, man. The family is getting progressively healthier, which, you know, you love to see. The Cavaliers are getting progressively healthier,
Our Cavs family is getting healthier. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, so you know, ultimately, it was just a really exciting game. It was really fun to see the Cavs just kind of run New Orleans off the road a couple times. You know, it was one of those things where it's like, okay, they kind of cavalanche them for a stretch at the beginning of the second, and then all of a sudden, you know, New Orleans crawl, you know, kind of climbs back, makes it a game. Then the Cavs kind of reestablish a dominant lead. New Orleans kind of claws back and makes it a game, and then the Cavs just kind of keep throwing haymakers. You know, it was really fun. Sometimes it's fun just to, like, go up big and then just be up vaguely big the whole game, but I think these are kind of my favorite wins, when it's like, the other team scratching and clawing for some kind of momentum, and the Cavs just wouldn't let them have it.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think it just makes for a more compelling game when you're in these situations where, you know, the Pelicans, I think their effort in the second quarter defensively really got them back in that game. It made things uncomfortable for the Cavs, and the Cavs had to go out there and problem solve, right? Like, they threw that zone at them. It took them a couple possessions to figure that out. But New Orleans has terrific defensive personnel, and they're able to make things uncomfortable, right? Like, you know, throwing Herb Jones on Garland, like that's something that you can do to make them uncomfortable. You got Trey Murphy out there, that's long. Brandon Ingram, Zion, like all of these guys lock in defensively.
If you're wondering why the Cavs don't have any 6'8 wings, it's because the Pelicans have them all.
They're hogging every single one of them. It's
ridiculous.
It's completely unfair. It's rude, frankly. I'm not here for it. But I think games like this, where, you know, the Pelicans had a counterpunch for the Cavs and then the Cavs responded to that, I agree with you. I think it's a lot more fun. It's more nerve-wracking in the moment, but really the most satisfying wins have some drama to them. And I think this was certainly one of those games. Real team effort, you know, Caris LeVert coming in off the bench, not a good shooting night for him, but he contributed with the assists. Sam Merrill kept the ball moving. Darius was phenomenal, and I'm sure we'll get into him in more depth, but we should start off with the return of Donovan Mitchell, because I was so excited to see Donovan back in the lineup. You know, maybe it is my disposition just because of this Achilles, but I am pessimistic. Unnaturally pessimistic for myself right now. So I was, you know, expecting the worst. And for him to come back and for it to look as good as it did, I thought it was really encouraging. He didn't have to play a ton of minutes, splashing threes. I thought his playmaking and decision-making was strong, not really reflected in the assist totals, but I think he made the pass that led to the pass a lot. And it was just so great to see him back on the court.
Yeah, just, and you know, he went 5 of 16. He talked about, you know, in the post game, talking about trusting that knee a little bit and getting a little bit more comfortable attacking and taking contact. So clearly it was a real problem, you know, and he's kind of learning to, you know, relearning to trust that knee. But I just think the fear factor with him goes such a long way. For a guy like Darius, you know, where the threat of that extra pressure, that release valve, the having another, you know, splash shooter on the floor, like, just kind of made everyone else's jobs easier, you know? Like, just like for example, Niang, who was quite good against Phoenix, so I don't want to like undercut that, but it just felt like Niang's job was easier tonight, having the two dynamic guards out there to force a little bit more commitment from the defense. Like, I felt like the Cavs without Donovan, they were sometimes able to generate really good looks, but a lot of times they were having a little bit of a challenge destabilizing the defense in a meaningful way. You know, when they started hard trapping Darius in the second, third, and fourth quarters of that Phoenix game, it was like, okay, things are just going to short circuit and Darius is going to have to do something exceptional to get a clean look. You just can't do that when both of them are out there, or at least not nearly as well. And I think it really showed. So it also opened up Jarrett's game. Jarrett had so many clean looks at the basket to the point where they just abandoned Jonas Valanciunas in the second half. And talk about there is no better combination, Justin, than the Cleveland Cavaliers enforcing Jonas Valanciunas off the floor. And they did that. It felt like old times, felt like the playoffs. I think even on a night where Donovan isn't particularly efficient, the stat line is not particularly good, it just felt really nice to have him out there. And again, I think it's a testament to his growth as a player, because in years past, if he goes 5 of 16 from the field and doesn't shoot a free throw, you know, you go, okay, well, we're probably not going to win. And two, like, you're going to feel that lack of impact. I was actually pretty blown away that Donovan was 5 of 16. I thought he had a much better game than that.
Broke that news to me. Like, I guess I hadn't studied the box score, because, you know, the notes and observations I had from this game weren't super, like, statistical heavy. But you broke that news to me. Like, I honestly thought that he had a really good game. I enjoyed his process. And listening post game to him talk about, you know, observations he had while he was out, he was talking about how, you know, understanding what it looks like when the Cavs do get stagnant, right? What it looks like when defenses do trap and they throw extra bodies at Darius. I found it interesting that he understands, hey, we got to keep that movement up. We got to keep the momentum going. We got to, you know, make sure that everyone's getting their touches and taking advantage of that. And I thought the way that he kept the ball moving and the way that he was an outlet was at a really high level tonight. And frankly, like, in terms of like the dynamic between he and Darius tonight, I thought it was as good of a balance as we've really seen in some time. And frankly, this was the best offensive showing that we've had from the Cavs since prior to the All-Star break.
Yeah. I mean, especially when you look at the free throw numbers, you know, the fact that they only took 3 free throws tonight. I pulled it up on Basketball Reference. This is only the 8th time in their database that a team has won while shooting 3 or less free throws.
That's like, wild.
It's a pretty insane stat. Like, normally that is the definition of a recipe for a loss, especially since, you know, New Orleans did a great job getting to the line. They had 26 attempts. But, you know, they just shot the absolute crap out of the ball. Their offensive execution was gorgeous. 38 assists, Justin, to 9 turnovers. Everything was really cooking. And, like, I think this is the Darius Garland portion of the program. Because our boy played, I think, start to finish, just accounting for quality of play on the floor, I think he played the best game of the season. For him, he had games that maybe he had more important moments in, that were a little more competitive, but like 27 points, 10 of 16 from the field, 6 of 10 from 3, which means, you know, he's finishing both well inside the 3-point arc and outside the 3-point arc. 11 assists to 1 turnover, 6 boards, so he's helping out against a great offensive rebounding team. We'll get to the rebounding later because that's also a note I wanted to talk about. Like, I just thought Darius was in total and complete control. And, like, I know I abused the, there you are, Peter, meme from Hook. But, like, it was another one of those games where he's starting to feel like these last two games, he's just kind of feeling like our guy again.
Yeah.
Where even when he had good games earlier in the year, you could just tell it wasn't quite there, quite right, you know? Yeah. So I
wasn't comfortable taking threes, you know, earlier in the year.
It just felt awesome, man. It was such a fun Darius game.
Yeah, and, you know, in 13 games since the All-Star break, he's taken 114 threes. He bumped his season three-point percentage from 33% to 39% in just these 13 games, which is wild. And it just goes to show, you know, like, he's healthy. He's taking threes at that volume. I thought tonight, you know, getting catch and shoot opportunities, that's a great sign. I thought the off-ball movement was really strong from him, and it's a step in the right direction. Like, I ultimately, like, I don't want to go, okay, he's back just yet, but, you know, it's another step towards what I think this team needs him to be and what they need to be collectively with him on the court. And I just liked the process from him. I think maybe these games without Donovan helped him kind of get into the right mindset and get aggressive again, because, man, you look at that Suns game and, you know, I believe his scoring in the first quarter was a career best for him. And then the Suns were doubling and tripling him every single time. And I actually thought, you know, he did a good job of not, you know, bringing the ball over half and getting trapped right away and turning his back. And then you're calling a timeout or you're kind of throwing those bailout passes. Like, I thought his decision-making in those spots were really good, but that's always going to be one of the issues when your lead initiator is under like 6'5", basically, right? Like, you're going to have teams be able to throw that length at you. And the advantage of having both Donovan and Darius is all of a sudden teams can't do that. And if they are trying to do that on one of them, you have to, as a team, the other one of those guards has to be ready and available, moving off ball to kind of anticipate that and have those passing lanes. And then obviously have the front court playmaking that we've seen Evan and Jarrett do throughout this season. So I thought tonight was another step in the right direction. And, you know, it was almost like having gone from those games, those last couple games where he was getting doubled and tripled consistently, like the Knicks did it, the Suns did it, all these teams did it to him. Going from that to, oh my God, this is kind of freed up. Like, even though it's Herb Jones, one of the best defenders in the league, or whoever they were throwing at him, even though he had great defenders on him, he was breathing a little freer and easier because the decision-making was easier. His passing lanes were a little more open. The spacing was very good. They played with good space and tempo throughout the night. And he's been pushing the tempo too. So I just feel like we are getting back to Darius being himself. And once he's back to himself, we can continue the process we've been talking about, which is get back to yourself, and then we can actually build upon what we were hoping to build on at the start of the season before everything got derailed with injuries.
Yeah, and that's kind of been one of our gripes about, you know, all this in and out, all the guys playing a little banged up or not playing exactly to their standards is like, one of the downsides to that is you still have time, but you're starting from the point that we were kind of hoping to start the season at, which is let's get these five guys together, get some reps and figure out how you know, impactful they can be. By the way, we still haven't gotten that because Max Strus isn't back, but and Evan's out. However, like, we are at least seeing, like, we have seen elite stretches of play from Donnie this year. We have seen elite stretches of play from Jarrett this year. We have seen elite stretches of play from Evan this year.
Yeah.
Maybe not all at the same time, but we've shown them. I think we haven't seen elite stretches of play from Darius this year.
I agree with that.
Due to a plenty of contextual stuff that we've tried to note as well as we could, but like, things just haven't clicked quite right for him. So if we get to see that, like, I just feel like it takes my opinion of the team ceiling up a notch. Because if, like, you know, there are guys who have years where it's just like, it just wasn't their year, you know, and things just are never quite right. Even at Darius's level, which is like, you know, an all-star, you know, caliber point guard. Like sometimes they just don't have good years. I mean, we saw De'Aaron Fox have like a couple of those years, and all of a sudden now he's like one of the leading scorers in the league. So like, it's not unheard of to have a weird year. So like, but it would suck, you know, in a year that's going to be important for them. So
important for evaluation.
So if Darius can find like this a little more consistently, and I'm not asking him to average 27 and 11, that would put him in a pretty ridiculous tier. But like just being able to hit these heights consistently, be able to pick up the team when other guys aren't available or aren't playing their best, manage the game. Donovan talked about it being one of the best games he's seen Darius play in his post game, just saying that like the degree to which he controlled the game in terms of, and it's funny, I feel like Donovan and us kind of see the same thing, which is like when Darius is in full command of the game, he is probably the greatest ceiling raiser for this team's offense.
Yeah.
Like, and that's been the case since his like sophomore year in the league, is that like, he is the tide that raises all boats offensively. So seeing him play these two games consecutively just feels really, really important. Because, you know, all eyes are going to be on this team's offense when we get to the postseason. And they should be. They had a horrible offensive series against a defensive team that wasn't that good in New York. And they have a lot to prove. So having your offense leading point guard back in a groove just is so important. I'm not saying that he can't go out there and have three stinkers in his next three and maybe he just was feeling good that night. Who knows? But the trend, all we can do is react to the trends we're seeing, and the trends seem pretty positive as of late. 114 3-point attempts in 13 games. Our boy listened.
A little bit of vindication for us, saying, hey, you know, maybe this like shooting hand that's got a wrap on it and he's holding all the time, maybe that was bothering him a little bit earlier in the year. Who knows? You know, feeling better, all of a sudden he's putting up threes. But you're right. Like, look at the playoff game that the Cavs won. It was Darius being really aggressive, because I think when Donovan talks about that, where he says, you know, like Darius's offense to run, like we need him to be aggressive and all that, I think in his mind, he understands when Darius is playing like that, it becomes impossible to take Donovan out of the game. It is impossible to deal with what that backcourt can do, because Donovan, like, I understand he's not eligible for all NBA as a result of the games missed, but he is an all NBA talent. He is a guy that should be in the MVP conversation, and he's done it with like less than great context this year. But these two have had so many dynamic games, like both of them playing great in the same game. And when it's really clicking, when they're playing off of one another, when both of them are aggressive, they are so damn hard to defend, and they create so much gravity. And when that gravity is present, we saw it generate great shot quality and great opportunities for guys on every level of the court, at the rim, mid-range, from three last year, without a lot of spacing. You add the shooters that the Cavs have to the gravity of both of those guys being aggressive and playing off of one another, all of a sudden the Cavs become so hard to defend. And I put a Twitter thread up the other day on the Chasedown account of, you know, different lineup combinations and stuff like that. Like, the one thing that's consistent is, hey, too big lineup struggles offensively if both guards aren't on the court. But like, the individual combos work really well, and the four of them together work incredibly well. So it is frustrating that we haven't really got to see it together. But at the same time, like, if you had to pick basically someone to be out, I think the guards getting time together matters more. Like, it's almost easier for one of Evan or Jared to miss some time here, because they're both such high IQ players and they play so well off of kind of these lead guys. The guys that are initiating the offense, Darius and Donovan, like, they need the most time together. They need to develop that chemistry. And I think Evan, assuming he can come back and he's feeling like himself, I feel like it's going to slot in a lot more naturally than people anticipate.
I couldn't agree more. I think so much of the two big construct is dependent on the other three guys shooting the crap out of the ball. And like, while they've had the personnel and the reputations of those guys, they just haven't shot the crap out of the ball. Yeah. You know, they haven't been high volume guys, with the exception of Donovan, and increasingly less so while he was clearly banged up, Max Strus, who hasn't been shooting particularly well either. So like, I just feel like once we see all those things kind of click into place, which I think you can expect them to at some point, like, that's when you're really going to see the proof of concept in action. Mm. Justin, I want to talk about a couple things that really impressed me team-wide. I know we need to get to Sammy Snipes some point, probably after the Zoom raid, who's to say. But I want to talk about two things that I really liked about how the Cavs played tonight. One, I loved their work on the defensive glass. New Orleans had 7 offensive boards. And it was not, and that's not like a crazy low number, but they were trying. Like, and that'll lead me to my second point, which is the Cavs did an unbelievable job gang rebounding and then pushing off of those gang rebounds. Like, they were just simply outrunning New Orleans down the court, getting to their offense fast, not always putting up stuff in transition, but getting favorable matchups and getting into their offense quickly. And all those times where they had these two absolute, like, Zion and Jonas Valanciunas are like the two worst archetypes for the Cavs to try to block out, you know? Yeah. This is not a team that historically does well with these kind of brawler bears in the paint. And the way the Cavs, but when those guys are both down there fighting for boards and trying to do tip drill, like, they're going to be well under their own free throw line, and neither of those guys are going to get back. There's a reason Damian Jones had his best game of the year just by running hard. And I think that the Cavs did such a nice job. There were so many plays where Jarrett might not have gotten the rebound. He had eight defensive rebounds tonight. I'll bet he had 7 tips to Sam Merrill or Darius Garland, where he was fighting Jonas for a board and just got enough hand on it. And there were Cavs there to help. I thought that was a really cool part of tonight's game. You know, Darius has 6 boards. Isaac has 7. Niang has 6. Donnie has 4. LeVert has 5. Like that kind of gang rebounding, I just thought that's how you overcome a personnel disadvantage, by coordination and effort. Yeah. And I think that's part of why they were so dominant in this game, because again, they were able to attack. Zion is not running back on defense. Jonas just literally doesn't have the foot speed to get back on defense. And I saw in the chat, Adam Eaton mentioned they whipped the defense so badly they couldn't even foul them. And like, that's the way it felt. Like, I don't feel like the Cavs were getting a bad whistle. I just don't think they were getting touched most of the time.
Yeah, I wasn't sitting there, and I'm a complainer. I wasn't sitting there being like, oh, what is the call? Like, I think there was like the one Caris in transition that I had a gripe with. But, you know, like, I completely agree. The Cavs were taking high volume threes. They've continued to do that since the break. It was great to see them maintain that, you know, without Donovan. I thought there were times where sometimes they were settling for threes, both in this game and overall. But, you know, I think that's in the process of trying to, you know, find that rhythm and make sure that you prioritize that. And, you know, some nights in today's NBA, you're going to play outside in. Like, your three-point shot is going to open up the interior for you. And, you know, that wasn't always the case. But in the modern NBA, with guys that are catch-and-shoot, quick-trigger guys, you got to play that way sometimes. And just kind of trust that even when those guys are going to, you know, go through the occasional slump and whatnot, they're going to start connecting, just like we connect on this here Zoom. Support for this podcast and the following message comes from Zoom. 500,000 businesses connect using Zoom, a single platform for phone, chat, workspaces, events, apps, and video. Zoom enables real-time collaboration for teams around the globe. Zoom, how the world connects.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing.
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Hey, everyone. It's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater. And this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
Carter, one of those guys. We're going to get to Sam because I'm very excited for Sam. I've highlighted how it hasn't been going as well for him. And I thought tonight was a big step in the right direction for him. But I want to highlight our boy, George Niang, who since the All-Star break is 25 of 58 from three, shooting 43%. I feel like his decision-making in terms of when to drive and when not to is starting to get fine-tuned. Like I've agreed with the decision-making in the process a little bit more. And again, this goes to this comes down to what we've talked about, which is trusting larger samples, especially when it comes to the NBA. Like, I see too often lineup data with 40-minute samples getting shared. I get it. It's interesting to kind of look at it and whatnot. But I talked about the Darius Jarrett lineup that has over 900 possessions, and the net rating of that pairing moved in two games by 2%, or no, by 2 points per 100 possessions. You're going to get these wild variances and whatnot. And George Niang is a career 40% shooter. That was going to normalize, especially with the quality of looks that he got. Darius is a very good shooter. He's up to 39%. Sam Merrill, yes, he was going through a slump, but that guy can shoot the living hell out of the basketball. He was going to start to connect. And what I really liked, I like this, and I don't think I made this point about the Minnesota game, but what I loved from Darius and Jared in that game was I didn't think they started the game great, but they worked through their issues and had a great game. I love those games from players because it shows that they still have confidence in what they're doing. They're problem solving on the go. And Sam didn't necessarily have a great start to this game shooting the basketball, but then he hit that one where, he was coming off a quick screen. I think it was Damian Jones that said it. And it was one of those kind of vintage Merrill's twisting turnaround shots that he splashed. The confidence just kept building. And then all of a sudden he's having a 5 of 10 night from three with 9 assists. I love seeing nights like that from players because it goes to show, hey, that fire is still there. That confidence is there. And they're just problem solving. They're just figuring things out because basketball, it's a game of runs individually and as a team. And the same goes for kind of the hot and cold shooting streaks that a player may have.
Well, I wanted to hit on Niang first because you blew straight past him to get to Sam.
You know me, I'm long-winded.
I know. God bless you. First off, my goodness, you got to give the guy credit because there is no freaking way he ever thought that he would be the primary guard on Kevin Durant and then Zion Williamson in back-to-back games. There is no world in which George Niang ever thought that that would be his job and that that would be the objectively correct choice based on the lineups available because it was in both games. I just thought he battled as well as you could reasonably expect him to. you know, Durant got his, Zion got his. They're going to do that. But, like, I thought he battled as reasonably well as you could have. And then, you know, in this one, I mean, gave it as good as he got it. You know, he was doing the relocations, you know, pumping, and you know, Zion was just flying past him and hitting wide open threes as a result. You know, had a couple really nice finishes, though he did have an ambitious post-up one-legged fadeaway. I was like, did Nikola Jokic show up here? But, you know, it was the end of the game. We were going to win. It was fine. I'll never begrudge an audacious mid-post shot. That would be very hypocritical based on my playing career. But, you just look at the percentages. Like you mentioned, his post-break splits. In the last, let's see here, 7 games, 3 of 4, 3 of 4, 4 of 7, 3 of 5, 0 of 6 against Phoenix, which, again, he's chasing Kevin Durant around. And then 4 of 8 tonight. I mean, that is the guy we were pretty sure we were getting in this deal, you know? Yeah. While playing pretty heavy minutes, too. He's not ever been more than a 20-minute player per game, and he had 26, 36, 25, 25, and 28 in some of those games. So, like, I just think that he deserves a lot of credit for being one of the more reliable offensive options when the team's been really, really down a lot of options.
Yeah.
Taking on the defensive challenge. And again, tonight, I thought he was really, really good. So, yeah, he gets a lot of a credit in my book for not just completely giving up on some matchups that he really just shouldn't have had to take on. Mm-hmm. But, you know, injuries, you know, suspensions, et cetera, have just made it so. All right, George, saddle up. It's your job.
Honestly, like, he's got his defensive limitations. I think everyone's aware of that. But, like, from a compete level standpoint and in certain matchups, like, it does work out. Like, I think back to the win that the Cavs had over the Knicks where he was so good against Julius Randle. And, like, there's certain guys where it's like, all right, well, you know he's going to compete. If he's defending in space against someone shaky, a little more shifty, you're going to have some issues. But I'm not upset with from an effort level standpoint, and I thought he competed well. And also, just a brief shout out to our guy Isaiah Mobley, because I thought he actually gave good minutes on KD as well. You know, he splashed a three. I don't think the assists were there, but I thought the passing really was.
Yeah, a couple of nice hit aheads, things like that. I thought he acquitted himself well in his first real NBA minutes.
Yeah, so shout out to him.
Yeah, but on the Merrill front. Now I got to get to the second part of your monologue. I don't know, man. I am such a fan of him as a player. You know, I think I'm probably of the two of us higher on him as a rotation piece.
Agreed.
Moving forward, I have generally felt like the plus minus stuff has been a result of some of a slump, obviously, and then also just some lineups that otherwise weren't performing that well around him. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I just feel like this was just an important one for him. You know, this was probably, this is the first slump of his professional career where he's actively getting minutes, you know, like, and to see him kind of fight out of it, and never stop taking the threes either, you know. He goes 2 of 6, 0 of 9, 2 of 8, 1 of 7, 1 of 5 during that pretty brutal stretch. And then
that's,
he goes 5 of 10
tonight.
That's
a really good point. That's a really good point of how he stuck with it.
Yeah. And that's what I said on our podcast with Steven to preview the Suns game is, like, the problem when you're Sam Merrill is you don't get to just be like, I'm just going to take the easy ones for a while. if you're out there, you got to shoot.
Right.
And like, or you're going to go, or you're going to get put on the bench. So I think it's really good that he had this stretch to kind of work it out. And then obviously the playmaking was really cool tonight where, I mean, and in fairness, I feel like I got to say this. I don't think New Orleans played a good defensive game at all. I thought they were out of control on a lot of their closeouts. And, you know, like, Sam is someone that really good defensive teams have been able to close out hard on and then still stymie on some of the drives. They were flying past him and letting him get into kind of soft pockets and allow for things. But, like, That doesn't include the hit ahead pass to Damian in transition. That was just gorgeous. You know, yeah. Like the playmaking was really great. And again, he kind of, you know, it's funny. He kind of feels like our Jetty a little bit this year in the sense that he kind of does spur some of these cavalanches. You know, when the team is really, really going and you can just tell, like, when everyone's having a blast and they're pushing in transition, everyone's like, where's Sam? He's gonna kill him. He's gonna rip their heart out. So I gotta find him. And like, he did that like three times tonight with some of these threes. And like, yeah, that, I feel like that vibe is something maybe I'm over indexing on, frankly, but like, because I love it so much. But I do think it's really, really important for a team that sometimes can be, in my opinion, they can just get a little too grindy. They can win grindy. And when I mean grindy, I just mean execute. Just they execute. I love it when they throw a haymaker every now and again.
Yeah.
That feels meaningful to me as like a pace changer on top of the consistent play. You know, there's a lot of teams that are all haymakers, and that's not good. You don't want a team that's all throwing huge punches.
Boston. That's Boston. Yeah.
Which, well, I wouldn't mind being Boston this year. But,
no, me either. Like they are able to play that style because they have so much offensive talent. Like it's just like they're Mike Tyson. They can just do that for as long as they need to.
And they, yeah. So like, but most teams can't. So it's nice to have a guy like Merrill out there who is that like variance generator of like, okay, we're playing well. We're up four. Now we're up seven. Now we're up eight. Sam hit three threes. We're up 16. Like that feels important to me in a way that I just don't think anyone else in the team, any other role player on the team, has yet been able to consistently replicate. Struce has done it a little bit. Niang's done it a little bit. You know, even Okoro's had some awesome stretches, but like Sam's the best shooter on the team. And like, I think that in, especially at the volume he takes it. So that's kind of where I'm, why I think thinking out loud, why I've been so fond of his game this year.
Yeah. And you know, my skepticism, I think comes down to basically just understanding the minute crunch and the rotation crunch when you're fully healthy. I think sometimes he'd be thrown out and, you know, this is me getting suckered into the conversation and letting that color my opinion, which is a tough thing to fight from an analysis standpoint, but it like, sometimes it just happens, that, okay, like he, just putting him out there would fix everything. I was like, hey, well, you know, like those minutes aren't necessarily going great. And that is the spot in the rotation where you have the largest glut of talent, right? Like you are going to have Darius and Donovan, you're going to have Okoro, you're going to have LeVert, and we know who plays there. But I agree. Like I do think that he brings something special to the table, and I think he has been getting a little more comfortable. Like even though the shots weren't falling, how he was getting those shots, and I think his play along with Darius has been getting stronger. Like I think Darius has been doing more of those kick out to the perimeter passes that we want to see. He's spraying it out. It's not just dump offs to the bigs, and he's looking for Sam in kind of the same ways that Donovan did. Like one of the things about that stretch, like the fact that the Cavs, even though they were down Darius and Mobley, they had the same starting lineup every single game. They had the same guys available every single game. There wasn't, you know, Karis is missing some time, Merrill's missing some time, right? Like there wasn't anything like that after Donovan came back from his illness. And you just get to build chemistry when that kind of thing occurs, right? And you just get that second nature, especially for, you know, a playmaker as cerebral as Darius. Once you start getting a lot of time playing with somebody, he starts to figure out, okay, this is where they want to get the ball. This is how I can pass them open. Because I think when it comes to creating, like getting somebody open with a pass, I think Darius is by far the best on the team when it comes to that. And I just think that you're starting to see more and more of that kind of flexibility. And I think that's really important because I can't help but feel at some point in the playoffs, you're going to need to go to Merrill, even if he's not part of the regular rotation. I think there's going to be either matchups or times where things are getting stagnant where you need to go to him. And I mean, you look at this road trip that the Cavs are on, where you know you're playing 14 games in with travel between each one of these, you're going to need to rely on your depth. You're going to be in a battle for seeding like the entire way.
Does this feel like the toughest schedule, like not necessarily the matchups, but like the toughest travel gauntlet we've seen in a long time post All-Star break? Was it the Brooklyn trip that just messed it up, or I'm sorry, the Paris trip. I mean, but man, they're just constantly on the move, man.
It's really like it's tough. And it's funny, like I saw the Charlotte back to back. I'm like, oh, well, you're playing like, you know, two games in the same city. Even that, you're traveling back to Cleveland for the second one, right? Like it's wild. But I think I really do feel like there is a benefit to this, because keeping in mind, one, we are in a battle in the standings. You know, we passed the Bucks, we're the two seed again. You're going to have an opportunity, I believe, on Monday against the Pacers to clinch that tiebreaker against Milwaukee. That's going to be a battle the entire time. And you've got several teams behind you, Orlando, the Knicks, Miami. They're all going to be coming for you as well. You're going to have to earn your seeding. You're going to have to earn every one of these games. You're working to develop chemistry, and you're playing a lot of good teams. Like, the strength of schedule is pretty tough along with the travel. I honestly think that's a benefit. I think the Cavs have the depth to manage a stretch of the schedule like this without, like, completely getting exhausted. And, you know, sometimes these road trips can serve to, like, galvanize teams. Like, I remember the Spurs used to go on their rodeo trip, and that was the time where they're like, all right, Death Star is firing up. Like, this is us. This like, batten down the hatches, hay in the barn, let's go to work. Like, we're going to, you know, ruin people's lives come playoffs. I think a stretch like this is a benefit for the Cavs, potentially, but, you know, assuming, like all tests, you want to be able to pass the test. But the thing to keep in mind as well is, all right, you develop some chemistry here, then the play-in tournament happens, so you're naturally going to get a longer break before the playoffs. You're going to be able to rest up. You're going to be able to recover from how exhausting this trip is. So make the most of this, because unlike last year's, you're still playing for something this late in the season, and you're not able to coast in the same way that you have in the past.
Yeah, and it's also important to say that even though it feels like a sprint and the travel is tough, the Cavs have 16 games left. No one has left less than 15 or more than 18. So they're right on pace with the rest of the league. I just think it's kind of a sprint for everyone. Maybe it's the in-season tournament.
Yep.
Plus, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And things just feel really compressed right now.
Hey, we got Cavs, 2 days off. Like, that's amazing. Yeah,
we get 2 days off. Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo. Cavs are 19th in remaining strength of schedule per tankathon. Milwaukee is fourth. It does feel like, barring disaster, they really should hold on to at least the 3 seed.
Yeah.
They're up 3.5 on New York, who are still kind of getting their sea legs under them and trying to get healthy.
Yeah.
So, you know, you hope that you hold on there at least. And then, you know, it kind of just comes down to how well are you going to execute? And, you know, Milwaukee, I think, is playing better basketball than they have been. So they're not going to give it to you, I don't think.
Yeah.
Maybe they do. Maybe we're lucky. But I think they're kind of starting to get serious. So the Cavs have won a few games I would have picked them to lose, and they've lost a few games I would have picked them to win. But now I think what you're hoping for in these last 16 games is like one or two more 4 to 5 game win streaks. Mm. You know, like either one long one, which is obviously dope, or two like medium sized ones that are just showing like, okay, we've got our fastball, we're ramping up our quality of play heading into the postseason. They've snagged more signature wins this season than they did last season
already.
I feel. So now it's just getting back to that continuity, getting your starting lineup together, hopefully, you know, by the end of the month. Hopefully Strus and Mobley are back by then. Who knows? But like, that's what the rest of the season's about.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notified, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
Okay, I love Walker Hayes. He's amazing. He's so fun, such a great entertainer. And that's why I'm so excited that JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited-time men's collection for the everyday guy. The Walker Hayes for JCPenney collection is an upbeat playlist of instant classics with laid-back appeal and down-home vibes. As a dad of 7 kids, he knows exactly what fathers want and need when it comes to their style. This collection reflects his casually cool styles with outdoor-inspired details and versatile colors. Perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th, just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.
Is trying to balance finding that rhythm with, like, I do think it matters to hold on to the 2 seed.
Dude, it's something to play for. Like,
yeah,
that alone, like, so many times you watch documentaries and stuff. It's okay, like, I manufactured slights. The way to get through the marathon of an NBA season frequently is, all right, let's find something to play for. Let's find, you know, that one headline that we hated it and we're going to prove someone wrong. Having the 2 seed to play for, I think, is significant, because I think when you get that kind of seeding, that's the foundation of having a year that people actually, like, change their opinions of who you are as a team. Like, if you go out, you get the 2 seed and you win a round of the playoffs, then you have a great second round, whether you win or lose, right? Like, those are the kind of, like, okay, feather in your caps that change national perception about the team, right? Like, because doubts are going to be well-founded, like, whether it's fans that are scarred from the playoffs, whether it's national media that's just skeptical about the team construction and things like that. Like, that's going to be there. And the only way that you can do that is by earning accolades. And, you know, it's funny because this is such a weird season where I think there's so many guys that would have been deserving of individual accolades that just aren't going to be eligible. Like, Evan Mobley is definitely an all defensive candidate. Donovan Mitchell should have been an all NBA player. JB, I think, without a doubt, should be coach of the year. But, like, even without that, like, we got to see, okay, Karis, please stay healthy long enough so you can get sixth man of the year, like, in that conversation, because you should be there. But JA, like, I think he was an all-star snub, but he absolutely should be in the conversation for an all-defensive team. Isaac Okoro has been phenomenal, and I think...
If you had to pick one to go on all-defense, who would you pick? I know my answer.
My heart wants to go Isaac, just because I've been on Okoro Island and, like, I love seeing the tourism here, you know, like, people there's crowds, we're getting excited, they're starting to see, like, all the attractions, how beautiful the beaches are here on Okoro Island. I'm going to go JA, though, just because I think the center is the most important position when it comes to the defense, and I'm so impressed with his communication, with the effort that he's showing on the defensive end, the way that he's battling. Like you said, even tonight, when he doesn't secure the defensive rebound, I feel like he is forcing guys out of position and making sure that a teammate can go get it. Like, I just think Jared Allen has been locked in on that end, and I really do feel like he has taken a step forward as a player.
First off, you know, picking one is not a slight to the other, but I'm going Isaac, man. I think Jarrett has more peers at the center position
that, isn't it positionless now?
I don't care.
I think it is.
Even if it is, I don't care.
You don't care. That's a better answer.
I just don't care.
Okay.
And if I had a vote, I would still vote based on position because I believe in something. You know, I think that you know, Jarrett has peers that do things the way he does it. Like, he's awesome. Don't get me wrong. But Isaac, I think Isaac has in a lot of ways been our secret weapon. We have legitimately just, he has removed opposing superstars from games as often as they've got the better of him this year. And that is a real rare trait where, like, you know, that was what Drew Holiday was doing when he was getting Defensive Player of the Year, you know, consideration, Marcus Smart, things like that. Like, Isaac has been so unbelievably good in an era that is unbelievably hard to guard on the perimeter. He's taken another step in just every way on the defensive end of the floor. I think he's guarding up better against taller players. I don't think he's fouling at all anymore. Mm-hmm. Just everything about his game, I feel like, is, you know, Steven on the last pod kind of talked about it. Like, he's kind of a culture setter for them. Like, he comes onto the floor and things just suck for the other team on offense a little bit more. And I think that's really cool. So he would actually be my pick of the two, but I think both of them most certainly deserve consideration.
I feel like we've stopped and credited Okoro on a lot of podcasts, but I feel like one of the conversations we're going to have more in depth, and there's just not enough time to do it now, but when we get to the off season, is the significance of having someone that just turned 24 years old, that's one of the best perimeter defenders in the NBA, that shoots 40% from three, the playmaking's unlocked. Like, one of these guys that's that young that you can consider potentially part of your core moving forward. Like, that is really, really significant. Like, we talk about the value of finding guys like Craig Porter Jr. and Dean Wade, like these value rotation players that just slot in. Max Strus is a natural fit. And, you know, people are going to have conversations about who should start and whatnot, but, like, you're going to have guys that are playing significant minutes. Having Okoro take the step forward that he has this year, I think, is really, really significant. And it just hasn't been celebrated in the same way, because when we talk about the ultimate ceiling for this team, like, we need Darius, we need Evan to take those large leaps that get you into those conversations with teams like Boston and whatnot. But man, I really do feel like what Isaac has done this year is really, really significant. And, like, you can just tell everyone loves being around him. He's someone that lifts the team's spirits. I think he changes, like, you know, culture, tone setting, whatever you want to call it. Like, he changes the way they play on the floor. Like, I think the ball has more juice when he's out there. The way that he gets out in transition and whatnot, offensive rebounds, like, he's just taking all those right steps in the right direction. I'm just so excited for him.
Yeah, he's been really fun. He's got more games with over 7 three-point attempts than he does games with single-digit scoring this month.
Oh, my, like, God.
That's awesome. He's getting shots up. Again, I just think he's gone up another level or two on the defensive end of the floor, especially when they have Mobley or Allen out there to take on a bigger assignment, especially when they can pair him with Dean Wade, which just feels so unfair to me. It's one of my favorite perimeter duos in the league right now, defending.
And not to cut you off, but, like, here's a thing to keep in mind. Like I said, he's just a couple months older than Mobley, but, like, he is still probably 3 years away from his physical prime. Like, guys only start to get there at like 26 years old. Like, he's probably going to get better on the defensive end. Like, just understanding of the game. He's such a cerebral player. He's not, like, full man strong just yet. Like, this is a guy that still has upside and untapped potential from here. How many times have guys been labeled a finished product? They are what they are, and then they keep taking steps forward. Like, we saw it with Tristan back in the day. We've seen it with Jared Allen this season. We've seen it with Donovan Mitchell this season, right? Like, adding to his game. Like, Isaac Okoro is going to keep getting better from here, and I'm just excited. Like, when he's got the grown man body, like, he's got a grown man body relative to his age, but when he's got a grown man body, this can be a guy that, like, really ruins lives defensively beyond what he's already doing.
Yeah, I'm just becoming so fond of him as a player, and I think if the team wasn't as good as they are, if they were on, remember last year after they traded for Donovan and Isaac was struggling out of the gate, and we kind of talked about how it was a little unfair to Isaac that we took a 4-year project and then in year like 2 or 3 we're like, go, you got to be great now. Team's timeline went faster than we were planning for you, so just deal with it. I feel like he's been catching up to that timeline slowly, but like, I also think that if the team were on that original timeline where like this was like their come up year, not their we got to win a first round playoff series year, we'd probably be like losing our shit about Okoro. We'd be like, this guy is, he is on the come up, but because he's guy would be 5 or 6,
I would be circulating that Jimmy Butler quote about Okoro on every single podcast. Search it if you don't know it yet, new fans. Yeah.
So like, I just feel like he's like, if he were guy 2 or 3 for us and we were a team, you know, on the cusp of winning 40 games and this was our first fun year, I think we probably are talking more glowingly about him than we are. And more as a core future piece, not a core future role player, you know? Mm-hmm. So, a really fun year for Isaac. He's doing... This is kind of goes back to the simple truth of, like, I asked the Cavs to do a few things. I asked the Cavs players to do a few things this summer. You know, go get shooting.
Thank you, get up, Carter. Thank you, Carter.
Get up more threes. Isaac, to you know, become more of a volume three-point shooter. And become more of an event defender. And, like, it's not always been consistent. The results haven't always been consistent. But, like, there's a reason this team, despite all the pain and injuries and weirdness and bad vibes coming off a bad playoff loss, there's a reason that despite all those negative things that they're going to win more games than last year, almost certainly. And it's because their process has been better writ large. Their young players are getting better. They might not be getting better in all the ways we might want them to, but mm-hmm. there is growth there. Is the growth going to be enough? That's going to be the question. But like, there's a reason this team is better year over year, despite some of those things not bouncing right, despite Niang having a career low in 3-point shooting and Strus not shooting the ball particularly well and Darius having the weird year he's had. They're still better because they just make more sense and their process is better. So if all the individual stuff also gets there, then, man, you're really cooking with gas all of a sudden.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm hopeful that Strus finally getting some time to rest that knee and get it right, that it turns things around for him, right? Because, like, that was the thing, like, you think back that Brooklyn game back in January, like, it was bothering him then and had been bothering him, right? So, like... If he can get things right and, you know, start knocking down shots at a higher clip, like, he's already been so impactful that, like, I just feel, man, this team can still be special. We can still get that catharsis. And I would just like the record to show, when Carter said we were almost certainly winning more games than last year, I did knock on wood because I knew you were still talking. I just don't put that energy out there.
Like, I hedged. Is it almost certainly?
I don't like that because it really feels like this season has been that meme where it's like, why do you give me all your toughest troubles? And then the response is, why are you still alive? Like, yeah. I just feel like fate has been trying to
They got to go 9-7 in their final 16 to match last year's record.
Let's put in some work. Let's get this done. But you're right. Like, I feel like there has been so much individual growth and we're just waiting on it to hit the collective. Like, you talk about how Isaac Okoro is taking guys out of matchups and taking stars out of matchups. Like, you think of arguably our 4 best wins somehow, like, one, they didn't come with Donovan in the lineup. Because Philly, let's remember, when Embiid was healthy, that was the second best team in the Eastern Conference.
Killing everyone.
And JA was amazing against Embiid. Like, really held his own. He was phenomenal in that matchup.
So was Tristan.
Tristan was great in that one. And Tristan, you know, his suspension's over after this game, so he's eligible to come back against Houston. Denver, no Mitchell. Jay was amazing against Jokic. Really, really competed and was a massive factor in that one. Against Minnesota, Rudy Gobert, phenomenal in that matchup. Against Boston, you know, he was terrific there as well. Like, I feel like he has been so significant, and I just feel like he's shown, you know, increased toughness, the playmaking. I feel like the communication is so strong. I love the communication in this game against the Pelicans overall, actually. Like, I really noticed how much they were talking. I just, it's hard. If I have to pick one of those guys for all defensive team, I think I go JA, but man, I just feel like there's a lot of people that deserve accolades for traversing such a complicated, weird season.
Absolutely, buddy. Fun team. Weird year, but fun team.
Weird, that's all you can ask weird for. Year. Man, I want some normalcy here. I've been through too much this year. My mental health is hanging on by a thread, and that is mostly due to my Achilles. But, you know, I've been really,
which
really
is instantly also hanging on by a thread.
Too real, my friend. But we will be back after Monday's game against the Indiana Pacers. Very excited to see what the Cavs do on this road trip. We've obviously talked about the significance of that game, so hopefully they can keep this going. Big thanks to everyone that tuned in live on YouTube. Make sure you like and subscribe. Click the notification bell so you know when we're going live. If you're listening via podcast and you want to support us, leave us a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chasedown's exclusive Discord chat, send a screenshot or review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. Until next time, go Cavs.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200,000 for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does all the work for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. Visit Picasso to see thousands of listings. That's PACASO.com.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.